CB Wallet Podcast. I'm Phil Lucas.
And I'm Phil Gerrard. Why are we here, Phil?
I'll tell you why we're here, Phil. We're here to talk about the world's greatest disasters. What went wrong, how it went wrong, and whether it was our fault or God's fault.
And remember, Phil, it's not our intention to make light of the sometimes quite substantial mortality rate in some of these disasters.
No.
We're just interested in finding out what went wrong. And be honest, Phil, be honest with yourself and the listener. If it came on the news, you'd be interested, wouldn't you?
I would. Sometimes I might even stay up all night watching it.
Okay, what are we talking about this week?
This week we are talking about 80s jewellery mogul Gerald Ratner.
Ratner's is one of the major entrepreneurial successes of the 1980s, a fact that's largely due to Gerald Ratner's management skills and strategic thinking. What's Ratner's secret? Ratner's great success has been to extend jewellery buying into a whole new social class. Young people now buy jewellery on impulse as a fashion item, rather than as a once-in-a-lifetime investment. It shattered the old image of jewellery forever. Ratners now have 31% of the jewellery market. Increasingly, Gerald sees his competitors as the big high street stores, Marks & Spencer's, Woolworths, C&A's. And in this fight, nothing is sacrosanct.
So, Gerald Ratner.
What was it? It was a speech given by Gerald Ratner, the chief executive of the Ratner Jewellery Group, with which he single-handedly collapsed his business, losing over 2,500 shops and the vast majority of his fortune.
When did it happen?
The 23rd of April, 1991.
How many people died?
None.
Did you ever buy anything from Ratner's?
No.
It was crap then.
I believe it was crap. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I'm not a jewellery person, Phil. I don't know if you've sort of really noticed that.
Yeah, you're not wearing any bling, are you?
No.
Have you even got any rings on?
Have I even got any rings like I normally do? I've got nothing on. I don't have wear jewellery
at all.
No, I find pants an incursion on my body.
Are you wearing pants now?
I find if I am actually.
Are you? Why are you wearing pants today?
Because I'm doing driving on the train today, and there are a lot of children.
Oh, good point.
And I don't want to be. I don't want any. Potential visualisation.
No.
And I don't want any movement.
No.
Any dangle.
No, you want any dangle.
When you're near children.
Don't want any dangle near
so
children.
I keep it tightly packed in when I'm in.
Is it a brief?
It is a brief. It's what they would call a slip.
Listeners to Phil and mine's earlier podcast, Ultimate Scrutiny, will be aware of the fact that.
Oh, no, it's white wire fronts today.
Lucas often goes commando. So it's nice to be in the presence of pants.
Always wear underwear when I'm driving the train.
That's nice, isn't it? Because that's professionalism.
I'm thinking of the kids.
Aren't you, though?
And the parents.
I mean, will people please just think of the children? I'm wearing rings. I've got my wedding ring.
That is a big wedding ring. I mean,
oh,
that is virtually
much.
Going from your hand to your knuckle.
It's huge, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's such a large wedding ring that it's changed the shape of my finger over time. There is up to 30 quid's worth of silver in that in that wedding ring.
That was Elizabeth Duke.
No, it was made for me.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it's custom made, but but the metal itself is not valuable.
Ah.
But it was made. And I've got
looks like you've hollowed out a wheel nut.
It is huge, isn't it? It does look like a mechanical thing.
Oh, that's nice.
One of the reasons I got it made like that was because I remember seeing a photograph of Ewan McGregor in a shop window.
That's not a good start to
and
any
liking
sentence.
His wedding ring.
Oh,
and
gee,
Ewan
no.
McGregor had a big thick wedding ring. And I thought,
no.
Well, it was good enough for a Jedi. It's good enough for me. And I've got a very, very cheap.
Oh my God, you've got a ring on that you don't have to be wearing.
Yeah.
And what is that?
That's a sovereign, mate. Sovereign ring, mate.
What's the point of that?
What do you mean, what's the point of it?
Well, it's clearly too small for your little finger. I mean, your finger is. Your little finger looks like it's in a corset.
No, it's fine. It's fine, we're talking about. That's been sized up proper, mate. She come at me with a bit of string.
So
she
what?
Come at me with a bit of string. She sized it up proper, mate. It's engraved.
Oh, what's it say?
It says PBJ.
Phil, Beck, Gerard.
No, peanut butter and jelly, which is something I particularly like. So I've had it scratched onto a sovereign ring, mate. Do you think Gerald Ratner would think that was crap?
I don't know. How much gold is in it?
I mean, zero.
Oh, he'd like it.
Zero gold.
he'd like that.
Imagine not even brass, to be honest.
Fabulous.
When I buy jewellery, I specifically want my hands to go green. that's what I ask for.
So why do you wear jewellery then? Now, wedding rings are unusual, in my view, for men, because certainly I think quite a modern thing. I think
really?
I think over the last 20 years men have worn wedding rings.
My dad had a wedding ring.
Did he?
Yeah.
My dad never had a wedding ring.
Well, I say my dad had a wedding ring. He has since pawned it for cash for gold. So when that advert came on, he couldn't have ripped that fucker off quick enough.
He's pawned his wedding ring.
Oh yeah, in moments he pawned it. Yeah, yeah. The second that Cash for Gold thing came on the TV, my dad got rid.
Wow.
Did your dad not have a wedding ring?
No.
Why not?
Nobody I know had a wedding ring. Really? I thought it was just something the ladies had.
Really?
Yeah, something the ladies wear so that when you go into a bar, you know whether to bother or not.
You are literally from 1941. Aren't you? I thought men always had wedding rings.
I'd never known it.
It's a ring exchanging ceremony, right? In the wedding, what was they with this ring? I thee wed.
Yeah, this ring, one ring.
Oh, really? You think that the man just puts the ring on the woman and that's it?
That's every wedding I've virtually ever been to.
Oh, well, maybe that is a thing then. I'd always thought it was both, but maybe that's just because I've only been to lily-livered liberal weddings.
Might be that. I don't know. I genuinely am surprised that so many men wear a wedding ring, because I wouldn't wear one.
Wouldn't you wear one?
No.
Like, if you and Jules got married, you wouldn't wear a wedding ring?
No.
And when they said, with this ring, what would you do? Just fling it across the congregation?
Well, it's this ring.
Fling it across.
Julie gets a ring.
Julie gets a
ring.
That's
a traditional thing.
Yeah.
A wedding ring.
Yeah.
And I just don't.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
Well,
would you turn up at the ceremony pissed? Would you turn up pissed? Would you wear a suit? Would you have trainers on? I could see you in trainers and your dad's suit.
It's really difficult one because I hate wearing a suit.
Yeah.
But I really like the traditional elements of weddings. Actually, no, I don't. I'm talking out my arse. No.
What do you like about a wedding? I don't like weddings particularly.
Actually, no, I don't say I fucking hate weddings.
Why do you hate weddings?
Take it from the outset. Getting ready for the wedding, I don't like wearing a suit.
You don't like putting on the suit?
So I don't like that. Going to the wedding,
yeah.
I'm not interested. It's boring.
Don't like the journey.
Don't like the journey.
Yeah.
I don't like the service.
No.
I don't like meeting people.
I bet you like the church.
I like the church. I like physically like the church. Okay. I like looking around at the building. I just wish I could look at it with nobody in there with my camera.
Right.
The ceremony, realistically, you're looking at your watch.
Yeah.
You want that over as quick as possible.
Yeah. Then you've got to get from the ceremony to the reception.
To the reception.
Which often involves a bus.
A bus, yeah, which is normally an old route master or something quirky.
Oh, I hate a quirky. Yeah. Oh, I hate when it's quirky.
Yeah, yeah, fuck. Then you've got to talk to strangers
for a bit. That. With a fucking Pims.
Yep.
The fucking Pims.
Then,
I think it is telling that nobody breaks out the Pims in front of the telly, do they?
No, that's true. It's not your go-to drink, is it?
It's not your go-to drink, is it? I could murder a Pims. Without being coerced, I don't think there's any drink I'd put fruit in, like, of my own volition. I've never, like, cracked open a can of Coke and thought, you know what, might force a cucumber into that.
Then we have to have the wedding breakfast.
Why is it a wedding breakfast?
Start of life.
That's bullshit.
Funeral supper, wedding breakfast.
Is it a funeral supper?
Journey of life, yeah.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's why it works out like that.
Yeah.
So,
bar mitzvah brunch.
That's a Cadbury's bar in the making.
I'd notch off a bar mitzvah brunch. It's chocolate and Jewish. My two favourite things.
I think a wedding breakfast is that is probably my least favourite part of a whole day that I despise.
You're very hot at that point.
Very hot.
You're sat with people you don't know.
I'm told where to sit.
And I tell you what fucks me off, right, is that if you've got children, right, or a family, then you look at that table plan and you go, all right, those are these round tables.
Yeah.
I'm sat with my wife, my granny, my two children, you know, blah, blah, blah. But for people like us who don't have children, you go, all right, there I am. There's Beck I'm sat next to. She's sat next to weird Uncle Dan that no one talks about. And then that, like, a weird array of odds and sods friends that nobody really likes.
Yeah.
Always on the weirdos table.
Yeah,
at
I'm stuck with fucking Andy from Stevenage
who didn't really want to come. Yeah, but they like his girlfriend. Yeah, that's the table I'm on every single wedding. At my own wedding, I was at that table.
Right, Phil. Who is Gerald Ratner?
Younger listeners, of who I imagine we have none, won't remember Gerald Ratner. Gerald Ratner was a businessman. Think Alan Sugar, but even shitter, if you can possibly imagine that. Do you like Alan Sugar?
Not really.
I can't stand Alan Sugar. Sorry, Alan, if you listen to this. That'd be a kick in the balls for Alan, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
he loves it. You know, he's enjoyed the Hindenburg. He's loved Pompeii. He thought, I'll tune into Gerald Ratner because I'm a businessman. See what my two bezzy mates think about Gerald Ratner. Oh, they think I'm a dickhead. Gerald Ratner. So, yes, he's a businessman. Mm. He was born on the 1st of November 1949, which makes him...
Oh, he makes 69.
Although he was 42 at the time of this disaster. How tall is he?
Oh, he's 6 inches shorter than Gary Lineker.
So that's one Gary Lineker-ish.
A little bit, yeah. 6/8 of Gary Lineker, I reckon.
So picture a 42-year-old businessman about 6/8
the size
of Gary Lineker. Yeah. Okay. For people for whom this seems to make sense, the 1st of November was the 305th day of the year of 1949. Mm. Quite a long way through that, 305 days, isn't it? That's most of the year's gone
The time that he was born. Nothing to look forward to there till the next year.
No. That makes me... What star sign does that make, Ratner?
No idea.
The next time you can reuse a 1949 calendar will be 2022. Was this late at night when you did this research? Ratner was born in London. You've heard of London?
I've heard of that.
I'm so sick of London.
I don't go there anymore.
Fucking London. Everything's London, isn't it?
Oh, you're sounding like someone from Manchester with a grudge.
I can totally understand it, though.
Yeah, I can,
like,
to be fair to them.
Everything is London.
Yeah.
Every person you see lives in London, comes from London, talks about London. And you go into London, and they don't know the rest of the country exists because they're so wrapped up in London. So anyway, Ratner was born in London, and he based his philosophy of business on his experiences as a boy in Petticoat Lane Market.
Bet he worked on a barrow like Alan Sugar.
He's cut from that cloth, isn't he?
Yeah.
That sort of thing. The idea you have a business philosophy bosses my head as well, because you buy shit, you sell it more expensive. That's... what else can you have?
What
you
got there, Phil, is that is your business philosophy.
That's not a philosophy. That's literally how it works. It's not a philosophy, is it? What my philosophy is, we buy a load of stuff and then we sell it for much, much cheaper than we bought it, and then we go busted again in a month, because that doesn't work. You got to buy something and it's the only way it works. Gerald Ratner joined the family jewellery business in 1966 and took it over in 1984. That annoys me.
What?
Taking over the family business. Because I've got no family business to take over. Like Donald Trump.
Where's this going?
Yeah, good point.
No, carry on. I want to know where it's going. I want to see
that
you.
People will have a family business. I haven't got a family business. Have you got a family business?
No.
If I had a family business, I'd own the family business by now. Whatever, you know, selling widgets and widgets or whatever.
Well, there's no point in being jealous about it.
I'm not jealous. It just annoys me that someone's got a family business.
Well, it shouldn't annoy you. You should have a go at your parents for not working hard enough.
Well, I would if they'd answer the phone. During this time, Gerald Ratner built up an extremely successful chain of jewellers called...
Ratner's!
During the late 80s. Anyway, Ratner's shops were unusual at the time in that they shocked the formerly staid jewellery industry by displaying fluorescent orange posters advertising cut-price bargains and by offering low-pass ranges.
Oh, they really did. Your big old coloured sign, sale now on, 50% off. Really vulgar.
Because jewellery is a thing, isn't it? Jewellery is one of the things where you're supposed to be reverent about it. And I suppose taking that reverence away from it made people get a bit hoity-toity, I suppose.
It's like perfume. Perfume is actually very, very cheap to produce, but the massive cost of it is because you feel you're buying into a lifestyle.
Yeah,
very much like diamonds. Diamonds don't actually cost very much at all.
Really?
No, there's no... mining diamonds is relatively cheap.
Really?
But they put a massive price on it because it's aspirational. So you feel you're getting... I mean, diamonds are lovely, but
world's fucked up, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can't buy a lifestyle. Because wherever you go, you've got to take you with you.
There's your problem. There's your problem of Western capitalism in a nutshell. You can't buy a lifestyle.
At its peak, the Ratners Group consisted of Ratners, H. Samuel, Ernest Jones, Leslie Davis, Watches of Switzerland, and over 1,000 shops in the US, including K's. H. Samuel and Ernest Jones still exists, I guess.
They do, not owned by the Ratners anymore, though.
Oh, well, okay.
No.
Ratners was one of the few British retailers to succeed in the US, and I guess they're not there anymore.
I'd guess not, no.
All because of one little speech that Gerald Ratner gave. So, Phil, what was the disaster? What did Ratner do? What did he do? What did he do?
Let me tell you, although widely regarded as tacky and the sort of place that only common people... bought their jewellery from, or as you would prefer to say, Phil, the underclass.
I don't think I would prefer to say the underclass.
These shops, the shops and their wares were nevertheless extremely popular with the public. That was until the 23rd of April 1991, when Ratner gave a speech addressing a conference of the Institute of Directors at the Royal Albert Hall. Now, a conference of the Institute of Directors is where people with lots of money gather to congratulate themselves in a safe space away from the dregs of society. Would you say that's about accurate?
Well, there's lots of those about, isn't there? Where they get together and backslap each other. it must have been, though, to be nice to Gerald Ratner for a minute, it must have been pretty scary. It's the Royal Albert Hall.
Yeah.
And he's a jeweller.
Yeah, you know, he's not frog's earrings.
He's not Skunker Nancy.
Skunker Nancy. Oh, they're two words no one's said for 25 years.
It must have been scary for him.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and to fall so completely when actually after the speech, I think that he probably thought he did quite a good job because they loved him in the room and that's part of the problem.
Well, yes, it's true. After the speech, he actually said, I thought that speech went down rather well.
And I bet it did in the room because they're all shits.
Mm.
And that's why it's a little bit like Plebgate. Do you remember that? And it's what happens is every now and again, the general public go, oh, my God, these people are shits. They're not like, they're not.
But I sort of think, well, why didn't you know that?
Because you want to feel you want to think the best of people, don't you? You want to feel that people are genuinely nice in their soul.
That's why they win.
Yeah, it's absolutely why they win. Yeah,
that's why conservatives are better because they realise that people are sinful and they've got to be kept in line. Whereas Labour people think people are inherently good.
Yeah, God, it's fucking bleak. Whichever way you look at it, isn't it?
Right. So it's this glittering occasion, right?
Yeah.
Like really important, Royal Albert Hall.
Yeah.
Thousands of people there.
Yeah.
The kind of keynote speech of the Institute of Directors, who are there all your big wigs.
Because he'd done something new, hadn't he? He'd done a new thing in the market.
Yeah, jewellery had gone from being this sort of quiet, aspirational, oh yes, look at this is very worthy, to wow, buy it.
Cheap, some fucking jewellery, mate. Well, jewellery ring, mate, jewellery. Mm. Like that.
Which may seem normal now, but was not at the
time.
Like
air travel, I suppose, did that, didn't it? It sort of opened up.
It morphed, didn't it, from the 60s. It sort of morphed, didn't it, from the 60s, where only really sort of wealthy or relatively wealthy people could afford it. And then kind of by the late 60s, sort of the lesser people could afford it.
That's true, though.
No, that's that sort of thing, yeah.
That's how it was the same thing, isn't it?
So because it was such a massive event, Ratner, jeweller, multimillionaire jeweller, he had actually asked several people for their comments on what he was proposing to say at this speech. And he even called in a public speaking consultancy run by a guy called Greville Janner, who was quite a big name in that at the time. So Ratner was taking this really, really seriously.
Which I think, and we've talked about this earlier today, but which I think shows the danger of taking too much advice. Everyone thinks you should take advice. And as I get older, I'm really beginning to think that actually nobody knows. Nobody knows what the answer to anything is. Mm. You're much, much better going with your own gut instinct than you are taking like shitloads and shitloads of advice from other people.
Well, it's very apt in this sense because he actually ran his text of the speech past a member of his staff and they said, I think you should put in a couple of jokes. People like your jokes.
May have been a mistake.
Ratners. And I have to admit that while it offers choice with its 99p earrings, it's positioned very down market and it doesn't represent prosperity. And come to think of it, it's got very little to do with quality as well. But also, I have to be honest, also in Ratner's, we sell gifts as well as jewellery. Things like a teapot for £2. Or we've got this imitation book that you lay on your coffee table. The pages don't actually open, but they have beautiful curled up corners with imitation antique dust. I know you might say it's not in the best possible taste, but we sold 250,000 of them last year. We also do this nice sherry decanter. It's cut glass, and it comes complete with 6 glasses on a silver-plated tray that your butler could bring you in and serve you drinks on. And it's really only cost £4.95. People say to me, how can you sell this for such a low price? I say, because it's total crap. It's no point beating around the bush. Anyway, our Ratner's shops will never win any awards for design. They're not in the best possible taste, I admit that. In fact, some people say they can't even see the jewellery for all the banners and posters smothering the shop windows. So it's interesting that these shops, that everyone has a good laugh about, take more money per square foot than any other retailer in Europe. Why? Because we give the customer what they want.
Well, there's a lot going on there.
People talk about Gerald Ratner. The thing that Gerald Ratner did is because he said his products were crap. Mm. And because they were crap, people stopped buying them. But I don't think that's it. It's the tray your butler can serve your drinks on. Mm. Because that is a kick in the fucking teeth.
Yes.
That's like, oh yeah, your butler can bring it. He knows the people he's selling to don't have a butler, but he knows that they're aspiring to that lifestyle, and he's taking the piss out of that aspiration, which is unacceptable and quite disgusting. And then to sort of say, it's crap, I'm taking it. This is a joke that says, I'm taking advantage of poor, thick people.
Exactly.
It's not just that the stuff is crap.
No, that's a small part of it. Yes, he's up the ladder, looking down. And he's essentially laughing because he's making millions and millions of pounds off of people that he considers less worthy than him.
Yeah, which is ironic, seeing as that he's... This is another thing that I think is the tragedy of Gerald Ratner, is because from what we know about him, he actually comes from that life.
Yeah.
And so what he feels like he's doing, really, is that he's more playing up to the... He's at the Royal Albert Hall, and he's trying to ingratiate himself with a load of fucking sparkly twats, right? And
some of whom have had probably very, very privileged, very privileged in traditional sense of the word.
And who will love this,
yeah, right?
Because they're arseholes. And so he's probably not an arsehole, Jerry. He probably doesn't think this, which is why it comes across as bad as it does, because he's trying to say the thing he thinks that they will like, which is, I imagine if he'd gone up and he'd said, people deserve to have a better quality of life, and I'm bringing an aspirational lifestyle within the realms of something that's affordable to people who deserve it because they work hard. He might even have thought that in his mind, but that's not going to go down well with all these dickheads at the Royal Albert Hall, are they?
No, and the interesting thing is we've both watched that whole speech. It's about 25 minutes. We both watched that for this podcast.
Yeah.
And you're dead right, because the knowing laughter...
Oh, worst kind of laughter.
When he says those things, and the way the camera pans on the audience and their big cigars, and you just think, oh, God, he has hit the right note with you.
Yeah.
That was the first big thing, and probably the main thing that caused the stink.
But that's the headline.
That's
Ratner's is crap.
Yes, hence why he ended up being called by the Sunday Times Gerald Krapner.
it's a tabloid dream as well, isn't it?
You know,
it's a feeding frenzy. Mm-hmm. I can see that.
But he compounded this joke by saying something about one of his sets of earrings.
We even sell a pair of earrings for under £1, gold earrings as well. And some people say, well, that's cheaper than a prawn sandwich from Marks and Spencer's. But I have to say, the sandwich will probably last longer than the earrings, but anyway.
And again, there's something about... I mean, a prawn sandwich is loaded with meaning, isn't it?
Well, especially when you think early 90s.
Yeah, it really meant something, didn't it?
Yeah.
The Prawn Sandwich Brigade, I guess, which was yuppies. And is that right?
Yeah, it's the kind of... As Roy Keane said it, didn't he, in football, about, you know, the Prawn Sandwich Brigade, as in the sort of corporate people go to football.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
And so, like, a prawn sandwich is it's code for a rich... someone with lots of disposable income. Mm. And compounding it with an M&S prawn sandwich as well. Yeah. That just means wealthy urbanite. That's who buys an M&S prawn sandwich, right?
So what he's saying is a good quality sandwich that you, as one of my consumers, wouldn't eat, out of choice, or you wouldn't be able to afford it, is better, than the aspirational jewellery that I'm selling you.
So again, he's sort of saying with that joke, you people in this room would spend your money on an M&S prawn sandwich, which you know to be quality. And the people, the scum that I sell them, you wouldn't buy an M&S prawn sandwich. They would buy the shit that I sell them. So again, it's sort of like bigging up the people in the room for their tastes and the at the expense of the people he's actually selling to.
Completely. And it's hard to get over on a podcast when you watch this speech, and it's on YouTube, so it's well worth watching. The contempt in the speech.
Yeah.
It's very much, I did this, I'm great, I've done this, this is what we did, why don't you do it this way? And the whole thing is very, very looking down on anyone who is not in that room.
Anyone who's not in the club.
Yeah, it's hard to explain, but it really comes across like that. It doesn't come across well. Although, I will say one thing, there are elements in that speech where he talks about looking after his employees, and he didn't like making people redundant and he'd rather do other things. Actually, they were the little bits where I thought, actually, maybe you have got a soul here.
See, I think he's playing up to the room. Mm. I think he's literally, because like I said, he didn't just write that speech and do it. Mm. He asked loads of people, he got loads of, and that's what came out from asking the people that he was delivering that speech to. And that's, you know, I think he's probably a much nicer, much kinder person than the speech makes him out to be. Possibly.
Yeah, he was probably young and a bit boastful and was like...
And really, I'm really amazed at what he'd done, probably. Yeah. Like, you know, because he had done something new and he'd made a shit ton of money.
Yeah.
So anyway, the speech was widely reported in the media and Gerald Ratner faced a massive backlash.
And we mean massive. Now, if you don't remember it, it was headline news in all the newspapers when people used to physically buy newspapers and read them. It was on all the TV, wasn't it? It was massive. It was a big thing. We didn't have much else in those days.
No. People were not very pleased that a chief executive of a company had publicly said what most people have already known for years, rather than just lied about it. See, yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? It's like, that's the surface of it, I think, is that he said they were crap. I don't think anybody was going, oh, it's crap. I don't
it wasn't a revelation, was
it? I don't think so.
No.
I don't think it was like the emissions scandal or something like that with like diesel cars, where people thought they genuinely were like low emission and it turns out they were high emission. You can't buy a crystal decanter for £4 and think it was quality. That's not the point, is it?
No. I wonder if there are some people, though, who just think, oh, he does this at a good price, as opposed to, why is it a good price? Well, it's often the way, isn't it?
Yeah, but there must be something in your head. Like, if you go and buy yourself a Rolex watch, how much is it? £20, mate? Is it? It's £20, is it? Anyway, so, very quickly after this speech, the value of the Ratner Group plummeted by about £500 million.
I can't even imagine that amount of money.
Very, very nearly results in the firm's collapse. Imagine that. You say a thing one day about how amazing your company is, and the next day, £500 million of it is wiped off.
Incredible.
It was so bad that Gerald Ratner hired a chairman in an attempt to stabilise the situation, but he was subsequently fired by his own company in November 1992. Do you know why he was fired?
I guess they thought the association with him was never going to resolve.
Oh, sorry. I thought it was they fired a chairman.
No.
Oh, sorry. Okay. So Ratner
brought someone in.
Yeah.
And then that person he brought in to his own company fired him.
Really?
Yeah.
Fucking the 80s. That's the 90s, isn't it? Jeez, I'm all over the shop today. He was subsequently fired by his own company in November 1992, as you quite rightly say, Philip Lucas. Mm-hmm. The group then changed its name to Signet Group in 1993. I remember Signet.
Signet.
If anything, Signet sounds cheap. Ratner's sounds like a jeweller's.
Yeah. Like it's a family.
Yeah, you know, it feels like you could go to... What's the area in London?
Hatton Garden.
I feel like you go to Hatton Garden and you go to Ratner's.
Yeah.
Whereas Signet sounds like it's an out-of-town shopping centre. Doesn't it?
It's a bit sort of shape the way you want it to be, Alan Partridge, isn't it?
It really is.
It's that sort of polished...
Yeah.
Polished. Which made me think, I was thinking about this the other day. Right, Elizabeth Duke, which is the Argos kind of jewellery brand. And I thought, now clearly there has never been a person called Elizabeth Duke.
No.
But what wonderful branding when you think about it. You've got Elizabeth, she's the Queen.
Yeah.
Duke, royal connections, but also not impossible to be a surname.
Yes, absolutely.
So you couldn't have Elizabeth Duchess. It doesn't sound right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Or Elizabeth Princess. But Duke just sounds like a normal surname. So the whole thing sounds quality and royal.
While at the same time not promising that in any way, shape or form.
It's actually beautiful.
Yeah. Very clever.
When you think about it. Anyway.
Yeah, it's true. It's very, very clever. Yeah. Implying associations where none of it exists. Mm. So, long story short, the Ratner's brand disappeared from the high street quite quickly. Today, Philip Lucas, mm-hmm. the Signet Group, is the world's largest retailer of diamond jewellery and owns H. Samuel and Erse Jones in the UK.
Oh, so still going.
But Ratner was fucked, I think. Ratner himself, Ratner lost virtually all of his fortune and was down to living on the £3,500 a month. How do we know that?
Maybe he said it in an interview or something. I aspire to live on £3,500.
I was going to say £3,500. Oh, my heart bleeds, Ratner. My heart bleeds. You just described my quarterly income.
I suppose it's a kick in the nuts where you're used to yachts and private planes and stuff like that. But
well, sometimes a kick in the nuts is exactly what people need.
Maybe.
Although I don't know how much this changed because they're still doing it, aren't they? The speech created a new phrase, doing a Ratner.
Yes, very famous one, wasn't it?
I don't think people use it anymore, do they, really? I don't think many people remember Gerald Ratner.
There are other examples of people doing a Ratner. Helen Mirren, yep. for example, despite being the face of L'Oreal's Age Perfect moisturiser range, she actually said, "I'm an eternal optimist. I know that when I put my moisturiser on, it probably does fuck all, but it just makes me feel better." I think that's brilliant.
But that is it, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's it. People know. People aren't stupid.
Mm.
They know that it's crap, but it makes them feel better. That's the nub and crux of all of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Any other examples of doing a Ratner?
Yes, a bloke from Top Man, the brand director, David Shepherd, when asked if he could clarify the target market, I love this, for Top Man clothing, he said, hooligans or whatever. I love that. Very few of our customers have to wear suits for work, and if they do, it will be for their first interview or first court case.
And the thing is interesting Love about that. That as well, I think. That's a great one. Mm. And I think one of the reasons that maybe that didn't fuck him as much as Gerald Ratner got fucked is that that's actually not who shops in Top Man.
No, it's not. It's also not his company and he could be sacked.
Well, oh, really?
He's
oh, okay.
a brand director.
Oh, he's a brand director.
So they could just go, that's unacceptable, you're wrong, bang, gone.
But it's not, the people don't who shop in Top Man aren't identifying themselves through that. Because by 2001, loads of people were shopping in Top Man. I shopped in Top Man in 2001.
Well, you could fit into the stuff.
Exactly. Well, let's not go nuts.
They don't go above 34 waist.
Do they?
Well, I've never seen anything above 34. Well, I've stopped going in there years ago.
I haven't been in there for years.
No, elasticated waist now.
But if that was like... for some reason, it doesn't feel as bad as what Ratner said.
No, there is tongue-in-cheek going on there.
Yeah. And also, I just don't think it really describes... Whereas what Ratner did, it probably really did describe the sorts of people... Oh, he really fucked it, didn't he?
He really did.
What's poor Gerald Ratner doing these days?
Okay, so after this debacle where he lost fortune, eventually lost his whole company, he did try and become a jewellery consultant in France during the mid-90s. That didn't work. Mm. But he set up a health club in Henley-on-Thames in 1996, and he sold that in 2001 for £3.9 million.
So it's all right.
Back on the game.
Probably fine.
Yeah. In 2008, he wrote an autobiography called The Rise and Fall and Rise Again, My Story.
Cool.
And here is the opening line to that book. In 2006, a book was published called History's Worst Decisions. Alongside Nero burning Rome to the ground, Eve eating the apple, and the choice not to install a tsunami warning in the Indian Ocean... was a speech that I made in 1991. He's got quite a good sense of humour with that.
I think he's got a good sense of humour.
I've got a couple of reviews from that book, which I culled from Amazon.
Oh, brilliant.
Listen. Okay. I got this secondhand. Great reading for a penny.
There's something nice and ironic about the fact that his book's cheap isn't it?
And this one. As an ex-employee who met him on many occasions, I found this book wide of the mark in many points. Ratner's was doomed to fail. Driven to expand at all costs, never took time to consolidate his acquired businesses, and then came a cropper when interest rates turned and consumer spending fell. He would have failed regardless of that speech. Far too overgeared. Still, an interesting read and nice to remember some good times that I had forgotten about.
Maybe the business model was flawed and they would have begun to make less money over time, although the fact that H. Samuel still exists doesn't really bear that out. Mm. But also, he said all his stuff was shit and the company closed overnight. Yeah. So, you know...
Yeah. That is a bitter man.
That's a bitter man, isn't it?
But anyway, so he wrote this book. I don't know how well it sold. But he then opened up... Well, now he does run, actually, an export jewellery business in India. called Gerald Online.
Did you have a look at Gerald Online?
I did have a look, actually. It's actually pretty hard to find, so I think it's more wholesaley. But what I did do, one of the things I did do, was I had a look to see what customers were saying about the business.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, but I could only find one review.
Okay, from Gerald Ratner.
One review. Yeah. It was on
Saying it's all shit.
I got this one from Trustpilot.
Oh, yeah.
When I was doing checkout, got error. Second day, same error I got. Hang got, I was not lost money. Elsite's jewellery project are very good. 6 out of 10.
So it shows that speeches are difficult to write.
Well, talking of speeches, actually, one of the things he does a lot now is he's now widely booked as an after-dinner and motivational speaker. Which I guess you can kind of imagine. There must be some irony in having him speaking and the whole he's well known.
Because
beyond.
The speech, although it's you know, it's horrible, he's a good speaker.
Yeah.
He tells an anecdote, you know, he's got a good oration about him, hasn't he?
You're absolutely right, Phil, which means you're totally in league with the attendees at a Boots the Chemist conference who said, our audience loved it and were happily reciting all the funny bits the following day when we were back in the office.
If I worked in that office, I would burn it down and shoot myself in the face.
Doesn't that sound horrendous the day
it really
after?
Does.
Your colleagues reciting bits of Gerald Ratner's speech, who was there to motivate you to sell more paracetamol and fucking toothbrushes or whatever Boots do now. The Goodyear Dunlop Tyres Conference said one word, superb.
Proper Partridge, that, isn't it?
And the Southwest Business Showcase, imagine the prestigious business at the Southwest Business Showcase will be. That'd be the Gerald Ratner, funnier than most comedians.
Well,
just imagine the people saying that.
That's right.
Mind you, in these days, you might be right.
Well, I'm going to say, the standard is low.
So looking back then at this infamous speech, Gerald, he now says, this is a quote, basically, it was a good story for the Daily Mirror and the Sun. They misinterpreted my speech on purpose. It was 1991. There was a recession going on and they were having a go at so-called fat cat bosses. When they saw the word crap in a speech, which was an unusual expression for a businessman to use, they saw it as an opportunity to have a dig at me and accuse me of making fun of my customers, which was ridiculous. A tiny bit of truth in that, but you were making fun of your customers.
I think there's a reason why it was picked up.
Mm.
And then, that's because there's a mood in the country and also the Sun is pushing an agenda.
Mm.
But you did do that. That's the reason it went so massive.
I do think there was an opportunity, but maybe somebody looked at that and went, that is a self-serving, gross speech. Right, let's rip him apart. I mean, that's what papers do, don't they?
And it's true. It's indicative of a wider problem, isn't it? It's like Plebgate was. You know, it's like, this is a great example of the thing that really pisses people off. But it's mad that it's like the Mirror and the Sun are doing that, because I feel like they're not the voice. They feel that they're the voice of the working man, right? But I don't think they are particularly, but that's what they feel they're portraying, right? So I can totally see that they would want to cut him down.
The weird thing was his wife, Moira, actually advised him against saying those lines. She looked at the speech and was like, I just don't think you should. In fact, actually, I've got a quote from her. I absolutely advised Gerald against making those lines in the speech, but he knew what he wanted. He'd been working on the speech for months and was seriously prepared. He even got an MP to help him.
But if you were looking at that speech and you saw, maybe not the prawn sandwich line, but the one where he says, how can you do it for this price? I say, because it's total crap.
Mm.
I would underline that, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And you'd go, mate, I'm not sure about this.
Even without hindsight, you could have a nod to the fact that your products aren't the best quality and you know it.
Yeah, like a sort of stranger to the truth line, you know what I mean? So they are not the source of quality that you would expect at your...
But we never claim they are.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
Yeah, something along those lines. I'm sure that I would red pencil that and go, you're going to get... But, you know... It was a different time, wasn't it? And you could say stuff in the 90s, which you can't say now.
Yeah. You know. So in that sense, it was a better time.
Yes, that's right. You were more... It was easier to properly put the boot into your lower orders. So, Gerald Ratner, the disaster of his Ratner's speech. Was it God's fault or our fault, Phil Lucas?
It was Gerald Ratner's fault.
It was very specifically Gerald Ratner's fault. Although, looking at it, not just Gerald... I mean, our fault, obvious.
As a species.
But Gerald Ratner, I would say a good 60% of the fault. But I also think he showed that to shitloads of people, MPs. He didn't go in there half cocked. He wrote a speech that he thought was going to go well, and he asked a load of people. So they're taking some of that percentage of blame.
Yeah, totally right. You know, for all we've said about him, and I do think you sort of look at that speech and go, oh, I don't like you. but I also think he has come away and sort of turned it into quite a good thing. He's a businessman, and he's seen that there is money to be made in talking about the adversity and rising again and laughing at himself about what he did.
So that was the rise and fall and rise again of 80s jeweler Gerald Ratner. Did you enjoy it, Phil?
I did enjoy it. I'm going to go out and buy a couple of rings.
Yeah, a couple of fucking rings, mate. Going to go down each Jack and Samuel and buy myself a couple of silver rings. So, thank you so much for listening. Phil, what are we doing next time?
Rorke's Drift.
Don't shoot till you see the whites of her eyes.
That's the baby.
If people want to tweet us, Phil, who's in his tweets?
At CB Wallop.
Please do tweet us, because we want to know if you like it or not. It'd be great if you like it. If you like it, tell us. If you don't, then keep it to yourself.
I'm 48. I don't take advice anymore. I found my way. I found my path in life, and I'm going to stick rigidly to it, even though I may be very, very wrong.
Wicked. What's the Facebook page?
Just put Crash Bang Wallop in, it'll come up.
It's there somewhere or other, isn't it?
It's a picture of a plane crashed.
Facebook is dead now, isn't it? I mean, who gives a tit about Facebook anymore? Twitter's pretty dead, if I'm honest. We could go on
Gab.
The fuck is Gab?
It's like an alternative to Twitter, but it is essentially lots of very right-wing people.
Oh, my God.
So let's not go on Gab. Okay.
So we're not on Gab. Instagram, are we on Instagram?
No. I'm slowly unfollowing comedians on Instagram.
I now follow 3 people on Instagram. Do you know who I follow?
No.
I follow my wife, my wife's sister, and my agent on Instagram. So if you are my wife, my wife's sister, or my agent, please contact me on Instagram. So thank you so much for listening to CB Wallop Podcast. Please review us, like us, do all the things that social media dictates that you ought to do for your well-being and sense of id. Phil?
I've got nothing, Phil. The coffee's done its work.
Okay.
I've now crashed, and really, I just want a nap.
Okay, and on that bombshell, thank you very much for listening. We'll see you later. Goodbye!
Bye!